corner. Cycli dribbling the basketball, dribbling, and oh, he loses it out of bounds. Wow, Grant Long looking back and saying, what happened there? The ball must have gone into the Bermuda Triangle. We welcome you back to the show here, and we welcome to the program the great one himself, Mr. Grant Long. Always a pleasure to have him on the show talking baskets or anything else for that matter. Grant, how are you, my friend?
Man, I thought that was the original call. Wow. I was gassed up for a minute. I'm
trying to be yelling, Ronnie.
It was Sparrow into Cycli, and that's kind of where it ended. It's a non-reviewable play. Now, why would that be? Why couldn't you challenge that and say, hey, this guy should be out?
Because
it would have been an automatic out. You were hit outside the batter's box with a ball that was in fair territory. That's his runner's interference, and
then you run!
Yeah.
Couldn't look at it again.
Did they explain why it was unreviewable?
I'm telling you, the instant replay review regulations and the rules behind it are more difficult to understand than the most complex of immigration laws. They really are. I mean, as in the wet foot, dry foot thing. What was the guy thinking? The guy's got a toe in the water and you're going to send him back to Cuba? Get out of here. They welcomed Diana Nyad. She was still in the water. She had that jellyfish on her head.
Exactly. Try to get rid of her with jellyfish everywhere.
Feel sympathy for her. The only one that won championship, is that right? Philadelphia 76ers with those great teams they had? How is that possible?
Well, because that was a crazy time in freaking basketball.
Yeah, the Lakers, Celtics, they were both great. How about Mo Cheeks and Tony out of the corner, man? I mean, they had plenty of supporting players there for the Doctor and Moses Malone. Biggest Schwitzer, history of the NBA, was it Moses or Patrick Ewing?
Moses, Ewing, and Jordan are my top three.
Jordan didn't quite, I mean, he schwitzed a lot, but I don't think it was anything like these two guys. Moses Malone was dripping wet when he came off the bus, and Patrick Ewing. You thought he had sprung a leak. All right. I know. I'm a big Schwitzer. If I sat down during a basketball game, like on the sideline or something, there was literally a lake underneath my shorts just dripping wet.
The time!
Wake up with Defo, joined by Luby. Welcome to The Defo Show.
Oh, happy day. Happy day. Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
It's one of those things in sports that happens where the buildup is so long and so drawn out and so much speculation is hurled back and forth. I'm not talking about the Kentucky Derby either. It is D-Day today, huh? Mike Luby Lubin's favorite day. Are you relieved that the draft has finally come around? Because you don't have to book any more draft guests except the guys that are going to be... Well, I mean, they're going to be grading the draft, right? Well, I gave them a B-. I tell you what, they really swung and missed on that left tackle. They could have had him at 37. They didn't need to go ahead and spend the 35th pick on that guy. I always love the criticisms of the draft because nobody knows. Nobody knows going in, and nobody knows coming out. That's the beauty of it all, right? Do we know if Tua Tagovailoa, even after 1 year of playing, was worth a number 5 overall pick? Or was it a reach? Could be. I don't know. I don't think it was a reach at the time. It could turn out that that is the case. But that's always the problem with the NFL draft and analysis of the draft. It's a lot of speculation about things that we know nothing about, which is our favorite thing to do in Sports Talk Radio. Welcome to the show, the ALT Defo Show, and it's fine Thursday. Going to have a good time today. Jeff DeForest, along with one Mike Luby Lubitz on 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, and around the world on the iHeartRadio app. Our instant replay today, I don't know if you guys caught Chris Landry yesterday. You know, it's funny, we only asked Landry like 3 questions in about 15
Honestly.
Minutes. Yeah. But in his deviations and transgressions and whatever that he went into, transitions, he pretty much covered all the ground. So not necessarily naming specific players, but Chris Landry, an outstanding NFL advisor and scout, long time, and he's worked on all different levels. So that'll be our instant replay today. Dave Hyde on the local scene. What are we hoping for, Luby? I really believe this in my heart of hearts. And, of course, it could always use the qualifier, which is, well, you know, it depends if the guy stays healthy. In the case of Devontae Smith, I'm not sure that, you know, I mean, he's either going to be a home run or, I don't know, he could be another Ted Ginn Jr., huh? Where the guy ends up carving. I don't know that people see him destined to carve out a long career if he doesn't make it big. Because of the fact that he weighs, like, a little less than you do, Luby. I think he weighs a buck 65. Are you up to a buck 65?
Yeah, I'm probably around 165 to 170, and he's, like, 166.
I saw the way you were shoveling that wedding cake in your face at the wedding. Yeah. About trying a salad once in a while. No, you're a healthy eater, Luby. I mean, you
do my best.
Lot, but you usually eat, I guess at this stage of your life, pretty good stuff. And you know what? There's a lot to be said for that. My mother was telling me yesterday, I went to visit my mom for the first time in a while. It wasn't since the pandemic. I had to go over there a couple of times for various reasons, but trying to stay out of it because we were talking about the village people there, the people at the village of, I don't want to say village of the damned, because obviously my mom's living a long, prosperous life there, but Century Village, Pembroke Pines. And you're thinking, not necessarily the place that you want to be. I mean, what if you have this thing, this COVID-19, and you're in the elevator with somebody else, and she's in her 80s? You know, you don't want to be responsible for that. And that was part of the whole theme, and it still should be, should it not, Mike Luby Lubitz, be a responsible, humanitarian U.S. citizen? That was something that seemed to go out the window, and I'm not sure that it's returned or been revived yet. Where people just instantly hate each other, and you're already in some form of rage, no matter how little, inconsequential, whatever the other person's actions were that bothered you, and you're ready to just start exchanging punches. That wasn't always the case. Consideration of others was a big thing when I was growing up. Luby, even on the mean streets of Brooklyn, New York, right there, Fort Greene Park, there was consideration of others, as in and I've said this many times, my friend Richie D'Angelo, I saw him on my bike that had been stolen a couple of days prior. And what does he say to me out of consideration, Luby? And this was stuff that was a very ethical part of my upbringing. And this was just street stuff where Richie D'Angelo looks at me and says, if I had known it was yours, I wouldn't have stolen it.
Nice. That's good.
That's consideration, right? Did he give it back to me? Yes.
Well, that's good.
If I had known it was yours, I wouldn't have stolen it. You were kind of people. So I go over to the village yesterday. My mom is still very paranoid, even though she's been inoculated. She's had the two injections, and so have I. She still wanted to sit outside and keep our distance and wear masks. I mean, you couldn't be any safer on this visit. But what did she tell me, Luby, speaking of eating healthy, that she never smoked and she rarely drank?
There you go.
But you know what's funny?
Sounds like a fun life.
She knows I don't smoke cigarettes, but... you know, she really emphasized, and I rarely drank. Because she thinks I'm like a raging alcoholic. She really does. Which, you know, I'm not. I mean, I don't mind drinking, but, you know, I wouldn't say that I was compelled to drink every day.
No.
Although that walk of life, the reward for the walk of life every day, those arduous 3.6 miles over the bridge and down to the Oceanic there on the beach and then back all the way. Trying to keep up some kind of pace, even though I'm a relatively slow walker with a short stride in that regard. That ice-cold Budweiser beer when I get back is all I think about the entire last mile. It's incredible. So, I mean, does that make you an alcoholic if you're craving a beer?
No, there's barely any alcohol
exercising?
In the beer, and you only have, like, one.
Yeah, that's it, one beer, and it's over. And later on, maybe a couple of bottles of wine. She might have had a point.
That's a different story.
Hey, Mom, sorry. Sorry I questioned you with that inflection. Anyway, she's doing fine, which is good to report. And that was a nice thing, a nice aspect of yesterday. She says she can't remember birthdays, names, all kinds of stuff, but not really, you know, infused with any form of Alzheimer's or dementia, that's for sure. Still very, very sharp.
It's great.
Has a pretty good recall of things from the distant past. Now, I do, too. I can envision. Can you envision certain things that happen to you on draft day? Because I've been involved in draft coverage here since I got here. It wasn't that big of a deal 40 years ago. We know that. We know that 1983, I believe it was, that 83 quarterback draft was kind of the turning point. Were draft procedures televised prior to that? I want to say that was the first year. Or if it wasn't, it was darn close to it. And that's sort of when everything changed, because I remember going out to, and I can visualize myself as a young Deef, going out to St. Thomas Aquinas University, which was the Dolphins' headquarters at the time, and training facility, a real dump of a place. It's not St. Thomas Aquinas, it's just St. Thomas University, or is Aquinas?
St. Thomas University.
Yeah, St. Thomas University. And they had they were known at the time for a sports management course.
That's where I was going to go for my... Yeah. Grad school, if I hadn't stayed at FSU.
They were also known, I mean, for probably the most hideous professional sports team facility I have ever, ever been in. Of any type. I'm talking, I've been in sweaty, sleazy, dumpy gyms for boxing And always loved the dingy arena, you know, places that were actual relics when they were still very much in their prime, like the Olympic Auditorium in L.A. I have never seen a facility that looked less like a professional sports team facility. Imagine, with the great Don Shula at the helm, this was the embarrassment. I don't want to imply anything because I love the Robbie family, at least the Robbie family, the part of which I know, which is Tim Robbie, essentially. But what was Joe Robbie? I mean, why were they in such a poor facility, and why would Shula allow that to happen? I mean, this place was a dump. Was he thinking Balboa? Remember when Rocky's training and he's got
right, exactly.
He
probably just didn't focus. It's like Bobby did that with FSU. He let FSU sort of get run down because he focused on winning. He didn't really think about stuff like that. And I think Shula was the same way.
All right, I'll give you a couple of draft incidents that stand out for me, and it's a short list here. Not really. I mean, you know, I was always doing those five-hour hideous draft shows. I guess they were kind of fun once you got into it, and the people were out there, and it was live. It was a little interactive. I mean, it's something that's kind of missing in radio today, is it not? Especially, well, nobody's doing anything anymore with the COVID thing, although let's hope some of those things come back, right? Because it was nice to have a draft party somewhere where you're with a bunch of freaks. And even if you weren't a draft, Nick, it was still kind of entertaining to observe, although I think most people came. Well, what do you think was the motivation for people to come to what is now Hard Rock Stadium? Back then, I believe, it was Dolphin Stadium. But what was the motivation for the 5,000 Dolphin fans to come out there? Was it the free gift bag that they gave out, which really had nothing of any significance?
Yeah, my mom used to love that.
The first 5,000 people, and they would draw like 5,000 right on a number. If the 5,001st person was about to come through the gate and they didn't get the little gift bag, they were like, "Hey, you know what? Bleep you. I'm out of here." Sticking where the sun don't shine. I was an Eagles fan anyway. That's the kind of guff the security people used to get. No, they allowed more people in, but the first 5,000 or something got a gift bag, and it had like some station items in it from WIOD and a bunch of stuff that was relatively worthless. I don't even think you got like a mini pennant with dolphins on it. You might have got an autographed picture of Dolphin Denny. Anyway, was that the incentive? The other incentive was they used to always bring a lot of former Dolphin players, and I want to say they might have even sprinkled in a few guys that were on the current roster that used to be in various locations signing autographs. Now, that was kind of nice, and they were also trying to sell seats, which probably wasn't as much of a problem then as it became over the last 20 years. But I do remember hosting those shows. They were a lot of fun. And before these shows even existed, I go out to Dolphins training camp there at St. Thomas, and the surprise, the shocker. Now, you had no audio or video presentation of this as it was going on. So somebody from the team would come out. It might have even been Carl Tassif, the known Turk, who was kind of a henchman for Don Shula back in the day. He was actually listed as a running backs coach, although I don't think he ever did any actual coaching. The only thing that he was responsible for was, "I don't want to do your dirty work no more." He was the guy that knocked on somebody's door when they were getting cut. And it would be kind of a smallish guy with a perennial, just a perpetual three-day growth. He always had that three-day stubble. I don't know how he did that. Is that an art, Luby, where you don't have a beard, you're not clean-shaven ever, but you always have the three-day stubble? How do you maintain that? It's almost impossible, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
That was him, yeah. And so he, I believe, would come out and tell you who the Dolphins drafted. And this was a second-round pick. I forget who the Dolphins had taken in the first round of that year's draft. A second-round pick, and the word comes out. Now, there were only like maybe eight guys out there that cared about what was happening in terms of reporters. And that included, like, there were no national beat writers or anything on the prowl there to see what the Dolphins were doing. And they drafted Mark Duper. Mark Duper, who nobody had ever heard of, Luby. Not a single person knew who Mark Duper was at that draft. It was like, what? Who? And then I remember the word circulated kind of cynically that, "Oh, my God, the old man's lost it. Mark Duper? He's a track guy. He's not a football player. He played like one game in college." Turned out to be a pretty good pick, huh? Maybe one of the best in Dolphin
history.
That
was a great
Mark
surprising
Super
pick.
Super Duper. Second-round pick there out of some Schmanky school in Louisiana. So I remember that. I remember the shockwaves that were going through the Dolphin training camp when that selection was made. I also remember when, and I've told this story many times now, it was one of the few scoops I've ever come across here in my career. It's not necessarily my game to go sniffing out stories before they happen. Although if one falls into your lap, like the sale of the Marlins to John Henry, or in this case, my neighbor who was involved in professional football and also college football in a previous life before he made it big as a financial wizard. But my neighbor, a guy named Jim McKinley, may he rest in peace, a real sweetheart of a guy and a big horse racing fan, loved to gamble, was great at Let It Ride. You know that table game, Let It Ride? He was the undisputed king of Let It Ride. They feared him in casinos. He was almost at the point like Minervini, where he was banned from certain tables. But he got a tip, and it turned out to be accurate, and he told me, he said, I got a scoop for you, DeForest. Ronnie Brown is going to be the second pick of the Miami Dolphins. And I remember having Jason Cole on. He thought that the Dolphins would take Alex Smith, which certainly would have been a better move if they had had the chance. They were drafting number two that year. And I remember tipping off Jimmy Cephalo on that, and he laughed at me also. Ronnie Brown, what are you talking about? So, as I recall, I had come home, and I was doing something real early in the morning, probably one of my shows, and I came back and fell asleep for a while. I think the draft started at noon or somewhere around there, and I woke up, and sure enough, what do I hear as I wake up? The second pick in the, what was that, 2005, something like that?
Yeah,
it was NFL draft, the Miami Dolphins select Ronnie Brown, running back, Auburn. Which didn't seem like a horrible move at the time, but in hindsight, it turned out to be a disaster, no?
Well, Rodgers sitting there.
Absolutely a disaster. Aaron Rodgers sitting there, dropping. Like he was Warren Sapp with a hidden drug test. I mean, there was no reason for it, no justification for Aaron Rodgers, except a lot of teams felt they didn't need quarterbacks. Including, I mean, did Green Bay need a quarterback that year? Brett Favre played another 4 years for him before he went on and played elsewhere. Incredible. So I remember that because when they selected him, I was sort of shocked that, I wasn't surprised McKinley was right. But, yeah, you never know about these things, right, Luby? I mean, consider the source, and everybody is trying to dissuade you from what is actually going to happen because, as you said, throughout the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about this, and since they acquired a number three pick from the Dolphins, what is San Francisco going to do? Are they in love with Wilson? Mac Jones? Mac Jones, or are they going to take Trey Lance now? Everybody's speculating. Schefter is going crazy. His hair was standing up like Don. I know what they're going to take. He's on to it like Van Pelt. I mean, his saliva is coming out of his mouth. He was foaming. So we don't know. What kind of odds could we get on that? But will it be Mac Jones or Trey Lance? What do you say?
I'm hoping for Niners fans it's Trey Lance. I think Mac Jones has a very, very low ceiling.
Oh, that's right. You say that's going to be the biggest mistake in draft history.
He's a backup, a career backup.
I'll never forget, too, when Drew Rosenhaus had to be held by his feet because he was going to jump out of the... He was on the suite level there at now Hard Rock Stadium. And he had Randall Hill, and it was pretty early in his tenure there, Randall Hill, and they were hoping Randall Hill would be grabbed in the first round, and I believe that was the very last pick of the first round of that year's draft by the Miami Dolphins. And Rosenhaus was so elated by this that he nearly leaped out the window. Somebody had to grab him. Randall Hill was kind of, even though he's flamboyant on the field, he was, sort of a quiet guy by comparison. I mean, he wasn't yelling and screaming. No, only Rosenhaus let out a guttural cry like I've never heard in my life. You would have thought he had just given birth. It was a young Drew back then. He's much more sophisticated now. When you see him rolling around, doesn't he seem like he's just the CEO of the company?
Yes, he walks around like he's the man.
Snaps his fingers, somebody else goes and says, oh, hey, Joe, how you doing? He just points to a guy to say hello to. It's great. So I do remember that, and I remember the Dolphins drafting Billy Milner in the first round. Remember Billy Milner? That loomed as
a
mistake, and the consensus wisdom was, speculation was starting to grow, that Don Shula had maybe seen the game pass him by, the speculation on the draft pick was, well, they didn't really need anything specific. They have such a good team. Oh, my God. So they kind of slid Billy Milner under the radar, and he didn't really have much of a distinguished career for a first-round draft selection. And then the other one, the shocker, and this also involved Drew Rosenhaus, was when Tim Bowens was selected in the first round. Remember Tim Bowens?
Yes, he was supposedly a dumb pick. He became a great pick.
Yeah, and we had Drew on the show right after that selection was made, and he says, this is the worst selection in the history of the Miami Dolphins draft, which is saying a lot. And that night, he's on with Steve Shapiro on the Sports Extra show that Channel 7 does, and he's got his arm around Tim Bowens, and he's saying, here's my man. He's going to revolutionize the franchise. And he had signed him as a client that day. Unbelievable. All right, we're coming back with more. More on the draft here. Chris Landry, excellent analyst. Dave Hyde later on the local scene. Tony Segreto goes old school with us, brought to you by Texas Roadhouse Restaurants and Catholic Health Services. A draft guru, Luby found another one, a guy named Ryan Roberts. Did you make that name up, or is this going
to
be a friend?
No, I mean, he's actually really good when it comes to the draft. He's from our Outsource of Believe podcast network guy.
Well, very good. Okay, those guys are always good. And Lafitte Pink Eye. I guess it would be Dethoid. Lafitte Pink Eye, but he just goes by Lafitte Pink Eye now. That's a lot easier, a lot less traffic to deal with. Of course, outstanding announcer on NBC and son of my favorite jockey of all time, the Pirate, outside of Luca Panici. The Pirate, Lafitte Pink Eye, one of the greats of the game, and wow, I mean, was he a powerful rider. Lafitte Pink Eye, the son, who is doing a great job on NBC, going to be all over the Kentucky Oaks coverage and the Kentucky Derby. He is a veritable Bob Costas now of Thoroughbred Racing. He'll join us later on in the program as well. It's the ALT Defoe Show, brought to you by Altitude International. I'm Jeff DeForest. He is Mike Luby Lubitz. The Marlins winners yesterday, the Heat also with a victory. And Phoenix, for the first time in 11 years, clinches a playoff spot, Louie. How about that? You talk about futility. Back with more in a moment. Now that.
The time.
The draft. It's 6:25. Joining us right now, and he has a blazing hot website, LandryFootball.com, which we welcome to the show, Chris Landry. You know, naturally, the whole season, the buzz around South Florida was tanked for Tua. I was heartened by the fact this morning that Mike Tannenbaum says it would be a huge mistake to take Tua Tagovailoa anywhere in the top 10, and then Rex Ryan confirmed that, saying he's the biggest gamble in the draft. So two guys that I don't have a ton of respect for their opinion, both saying that it would be a big mistake. What is your thought on the whole Tua Tagovailoa situation?
Listen, the rumors are there. I always remind everybody at this time, those who know don't talk. Those who talk don't know. So I'd kind of leave it at that.
The only way to get your morning started is with Defoe, joined by Luby, right here on The Defoe Show.
I was saying earlier in the program, we fell in love with this guy when he gave us a very straight answer, his opinion about Mike Tannenbaum when he was the GM here of the Miami Dolphins. And it was that those that talk don't know it. And he didn't know much. But this guy knows everything about what's happening with the NFL draft. LandryFootball.com, his website, outstanding. He's done everything in football, coached. He's been an administrator, college, NFL level, and a super scout now and a consultant to many NFL teams. We welcome to the show Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com. Chris, how are you? Good to have you back on the program.
Hey, guys, how we doing?
Good morning, sir.
Doing just fine. Very exciting time for you, and I would imagine the website is abuzz with all kinds of different speculation and news and things that you've dug up and found out. There seems to be, Chris Landry, and I would imagine this is a universal truth, zero debate as to what's going to happen with the number one pick, which is going to be Trevor Lawrence going to Jacksonville, and it seems like a guy that's in that Andrew Luck category, just ready to step in and be a pro quarterback, even with a lousy team. And that begs the magic question, will the Jets make a huge mistake at number two, Chris Landry? What is your thought about that? And it appears that they are targeting Zach Wilson. That seems is that a certainty, number one? And second of all, what do you think about that? Is Zach Wilson a guy that was just beating up sparring partners in college?
No, he's a good player. The issue is not, you know, there's so much focus on, rightly so, is who teams are going to take and how this is going to work out. What people kind of fail to understand, because I think it's the fantasy football era that we live in, that this guy's the answer and that guy's the answer. What is really the answer is the ability to, A, know how to evaluate players, know how a player fits with you or not, and how do you build a team around said players. So the quarterback position is no doubt the most important. If you don't have one, you're not going to have a chance to win. But you're not going to win if you don't build a team around them. So, I mean, if, if Sam Darnold was in this draft, he'd be the second pick in the draft with the Jets. They did that already, and they didn't build a team around him to the point where we don't even know what Sam Darnold is. We don't know if he's good enough or not. He hadn't even had a chance to develop. They did such a poor job of him. So my question is, or the answer to your question, are the Jets going to screw this up? Well, it's not screw this up with the pick. Are they going to screw it up with the talent around them? I mean, they're going to have to do an appreciably better job, or they're going to be in this situation, I don't know, 4 years from now. Because the only thing they did with Sam Darnold was just kind of, they're hitting the reset button. Because now they got 3 to 4 years to evaluate Zach Wilson. But in order to evaluate him, they're going to have to put a better team around him. So if they do that, they will be real successful. If they don't, they won't. It's not that difficult. And there are a lot of players that can be successful if you develop them well. And then there's some that won't be successful because they're not good enough, but also they're just not good enough around them. So I think that's a great question. It's why when people say, who's going to be the best quarterback probably in the short term in this draft, whoever the Niners take, because they're the better team. And they you know, at least historically have done the best job of developing players. So we'll see. I mean, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But I think Zach Wilson is very, very talented. But I don't know how well he'll do because I don't know how well the Jets will do around it.
Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com with us here at 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, around the world on the iHeartRadio app. Back in the day when I used to put together a lot of radio draft specials, we used to, I mean, I don't want to say plagiarize, that's a strong word that we don't want to associate with this, but we used to take a lot of what Joel Buschbaum had dug out about the various prospects, and it was somewhat primitive, if you remember this guy and his preview guide for the draft, because he evaluated players mostly by body parts, like whether they had thick thighs, a big rear end, or whatever, big calves. What are the key elements and components that go into with this era of sabermetrics and all the sophisticated mathematical equations and permutations that go into rating players in all different ways? What are some of the things that you zero in on that create a favorable number?
Well, first of all, you mentioned a blast from the past and Joel Buschbaum. My God, I think most of us in scouting, Joel was... I say this lovingly, God rest his soul. He was can you imagine this in the day where you didn't have cell phones or, you know, cell phones weren't common. He would call all the time. He was always trying to get information. And he was really the only guy that had some validity because it wasn't his evaluations. He was getting information from people that he trusted. It was a different world. Now everybody is a talking head and nobody really knows what they're talking about. They just are trying to make, you know, hot take statements. But I can still remember his phone number because he would. I'm telling you, I'll say this. Don't dial it. It was 718 because he would say he had this Brooklyn name. 718-252-4481. And because he'd leave a message on my voicemail at the office. God bless him. I still remember. Anyway, you just hit me there because he was a good soul there. Look, there's critical factors for each position. Probably too lengthy to go over, but it's, you know, what he's talking about were physical measurements for each position. Those are important physical traits. It doesn't determine how good a football player it is, but it determines certain metrics that are indicative of a guy transferring. I think what people forget and don't understand enough about is, look, the film matters. What a guy does is the most important thing. But remember, he's doing it in college, and what we're evaluating is how successful they're going to be at the pro level. So what are the transferable skills and traits? That's the key. That's the key to determining whether you can make a list of guys who are great, capital G, great, great college players that were failures in the NFL because they didn't have the transferable skills, and yet you have some that were great college players that became great pro players. You have guys that weren't even very good in college but had the traits and became great pro players. So you can't just go into say, well, this is what you do, or, you know, this school doesn't produce this. You've got to study the traits, the critical factors at each position, and there are about 16 to 24 critical factors at each position. Grade all those traits, put a numerical grade and verbiage to describe how you came to that, and that's the true essence of the evaluation. And then when you put them on the board, you've got to, you put them on the grade, and that allows you to stack them. And that's the other thing that's probably misunderstood is, you know, people like the draft, and God love them. I'm so grateful that they like it. But there's so much, because there's information, I think you guys can relate to this, because there's so much information, what it is more misinformation than anything. So you see a list of the top 50 players in the draft, whatever. What good is that? That doesn't mean anything. Where's the cutoff point? How many of those guys are, you know, superstar ability? How many are immediate starters? How many are potential starters? So, like, for example, there's an assumption that the fifth player is just right behind the fourth player. Five comes after four. What if there's a break point after four and then there's a drop off? Like on my board, there's two, and then there's other two, and then there's players 5 through 24, first round grades, the remainder first round grades, are all 6-5 grades. So the point is you have guys with similar grades, and then within the same grade tier you can take the best player of need if you're in the same grade tier. But that's what we try to do a little bit different, because that's how the teams do it, and that's how certainly I'm involved with teams in doing it. So I think there's a lot more that's misunderstood. Hey, don't you guys get a kick out of the fact that, oh, but the Dolphins better do this, oh, the Bucks better do this, whatever, as if they know who the hell could play or not. I mean, it's like, it's amazing. It's amazing because it's like no one – was screaming the year, oh, I cannot believe nobody's moving up to take Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
Nobody was thinking that. I mean, it's like, well, I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, all the talk and all the mock drafts, they're 99% wrong, and yet people just live by them and they're hand wring, and then, oh, there's a bad draft and a good draft. And I got a story up on LandryFootball.com, kind of a history, years and years of the NFL draft, going through all the scenarios of things that have happened and how people criticize certain drafts, some of the best drafts ever. I mean, it's comical because people are interested in something that they know very little about.
Chris, I know it's super late and we do have to let you go, but I just want to ask you about Penei Sewell, and not even about where he's going, but he's a guy who hasn't played a lot of football in his life, dominated 2 years ago at the left tackle spot for Oregon, and then takes a year off. But he has all the measurables, and he has the mean streak. He has all the things you want for an offensive tackle. What do you do with a guy like that on the next level, talking about transferable skills?
You take him high, and you'll play him, and he'll play for a dozen years. He's a loaded talent. Wow. A lot of guys don't play a lot, unfortunately, today. I mean, you know, last year's COVID situation screwed up everything from a football standpoint. I mean, that's not that important in the big grand scheme of things in society, but – yeah, that's affected a lot. Most of these guys come out early. The Dolphins, let me say this, are in great position. They're going to get a great player. They're going to, between Jamar Chase or Pitts or Sewell, maybe one of the Alabama receivers, they're guaranteed to get one of them. So they're just, it's kind of like some of the decision will be made for them, perhaps, with, I think, Chase will probably be off the board. We'll see. But they're in good position. But Sewell, to me, is a Laramie Tunsil type of athlete, a Jason Peters type of athlete. Oof. He bends about as good as anybody since Ogden coming out.
Wow.
He's an elite left tackle, but you know, like anybody, needs to be developed. And you know, people talk, well, good at, you know, you hear guys throw stuff out like, you know, well, he doesn't have real good technique. A lot of these guys don't have good technique. That's something you can correct. What you can't teach is the natural bend ability, and the quick footed nature. So I think he's a great pick for somebody. I don't know where he's going to go. We'll see.
What kind of question is that?
What kind of a question is that?
How could you ask me a question like that?
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It's time for today's mini trivia challenge, brought to you by the great people at Gulfstream Park. The spring summer meet is on, Place your wagers at firstbet.com. As the NFL draft begins tonight with the first round of the 2021 edition, it's widely speculated quarterbacks will be taken with the first three picks, and even possibly the first four selections will be signal callers. Last year, quarterbacks went with the first and fifth selections, but it wasn't until much later in the draft the third quarterback was chosen. Today's Gulfstream Park Championship question is, who was the third QB to go in the 2020 draft? Was it Jalen Hurts, Jacob Eason, James Morgan, or Jordan Love? An answer in a moment. Be a part of the exciting thoroughbred racing at Gulfstream Park. Establish a first bet account today and get into the game. There's no greater thrill in sport than the pulsating pace and chase to the wire of the glorious racing and intense competition taking place on the track at Gulfstream Park. Hallandale Beach Boulevard and US 1. For the latest information on dates, events, and fan access, log on to GulfstreamPark.com. After Joe Burrow went first and Tua Tagovailoa went fifth to Miami, it wasn't until pick 26 that Jordan Love went to the Green Bay Packers. Hurts went in the second round to Philadelphia, while Eason and Morgan were third and fourth rounders, respectively. That's today's mini trivia challenge, brought to you by Gulfstream Park. They're racing Thursday through Sunday. Watch for the Kentucky Derby simulcast and place your wagers at firstbet.com for all the exciting action of Gulfstream's spring-summer meet.
What happened last night? A totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago, and Kawhi's not there. And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not. We're playing very possibly the best team in the league. 9.75 people out of 10 would figure the Warriors will beat the Spurs. And we're up 23 points in the third quarter against Golden State. And Kawhi goes down like that. And you want to know if our chances are less, and you want to know how we feel, that's how we feel. He would have played, and they'd end up winning. I go get dinner, have a glass of wine, wake up the next day, go to practice, and move on. But this is crap. Oh, it was inadvertent. He didn't have intent. Who gives a damn about what his intent was? You ever hear of manslaughter? You still go to jail, I think, when you're texting and you end up killing somebody. But you might not have intended to do that. All I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. It makes me very, very angry. But I'm still open to follow-ups.
There is nothing better than Defo. Welcome back to The Defo Show.
Pop was in town last night. Was mistaken several times on South Beach for Donald Sutherland. And there was no mistake about the fact that he's got this San Antonio team, as much as they seem to be well in decline compared to what they once were. They do have some good young players, and they gave the Heat all they could handle last night, right up until the bitter end. But the Heat prevailed, 116-111. 116-111, the final there. Spo, 600 wins as an NBA coach. A milestone, and Spoelstra is the second longest tenured coach with one team in the NBA right now with the Miami Heat. And I want to say it's either 11 or 13 years. Which is it, Luby? Spoelstra. And he's second only in tenure. Second only in tenure to Pop.
Yes,
Greg Popovich, who's been there like 25, 26 years. And any number of excellent teams. What, five championships? Not too shabby. Greg Popovich. And, you know, a very interesting gentleman as well. Hey, baseball is back. And catch a grand in your glove at 940wins.com. Win $1,000. It's remarkable. It'll be 12 times a day. People can take a shot at a grand. Listen for the keyword on the hour, every hour, weekdays from 7 a.m. through 9 p.m. That's like all day long. Then enter it at 940wins.com. That's 940wins.com, powered by Publix, where saving time doesn't have to be a compromise. All right, we're coming back with more. Jeff DeForest, Mike Luby, Lubitz, just getting rolling. D-Day at the Bay, my friends. It's D-Day on Biscayne Bay as the Miami Dolphins will make their selections, and right now slotted to go 6-18 in the first round. Not too shabby. I'm expecting two studs, Libby. We'll talk about that some more. Dave Hyde going to join us. Tony Segretto goes old school later on. Another draft, Nick, that Libby dug up that has a great level of expertise. Ryan Roberts on the show, and Lafitte Pink Eye on the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks, NBC commentator and son of the great Pirate. Back with more in a moment. Now that.
The time.
Pirate was my favorite, Libby, of all time, other than Luca Panicino. But that's personal. It's 6:59.